You know, if there's one piece of essential wisdom we really need in life, I think it's just knowing what to do first.
What's the real priority?
Exactly. Our lives are. They're just a constant storm of competing loyalties, all these demanding relationships, and just an endless list of tasks.
It's so easy to get lost in all that.
It is. Or, and this is worse, you pour all your energy into something that feels important, only to realize you completely missed the main point.
Well, that complexity is exactly what we're hoping to strip away today. We're looking at a powerful teaching that really confronts the single most crucial question of faith.
Which is?
What is the absolute non-negotiable priority for the believer?
Right. And the sermon we're examining points to this great insight from C.S. Lewis, who always talked about the absolute necessity of putting first things in the first place.
It sounds so simple. So intuitive.
It does. But, I mean, history shows it's incredibly difficult to actually do. So I guess our goal today is to really discover what that first thing truly is and how getting it wrong causes so much chaos in our spiritual lives.
And that search for the core priority leads us straight to Matthew chapter 22. This is the moment where Jesus cuts through centuries of religious complexity and just offers this breathtakingly clear answer.
Okay, so to really feel the power of Jesus' answer, we have to grasp the problem he was dealing with. The teaching reminds us of the historical context.
Right. In Jesus' time, the religious leaders, the scribes, the Pharisees, they had created this environment where, well, following God felt more like navigating a huge bureaucracy than walking in a relationship.
A bureaucracy, that's a perfect word for it.
It is. They had the best intentions, you know. They wanted to create perfect obedience by detailing every single possible scenario.
And the result was, what was it, over 600 detailed legal clauses.
600. Just think about that for a moment. 600 rules that govern everything from what you eat to hygiene to what you can and can't do on the Sabbath.
That sounds utterly exhausting. Frankly, it sounds completely overwhelming.
It was.
It reminds me of those, you know, those complex corporate compliance documents. The goal is supposed to be clarity, but you end up with so much fine print that nobody actually knows what the spirit of the rule is anymore.
That's a perfect modern analogy. And this avalanche of regulation, instead of helping people achieve holiness, it just caused intense confusion.
People lost sight of the forest for the trees.
Exactly. They were just buried under all these secondary rules, and they couldn't tell what was primary from what was just, you know, a mechanism. The whole pursuit of righteousness just became a checklist, an impossible one.
So it's right in that moment, in this peak of spiritual complexity, that a lawyer comes up to Jesus. And he's testing him, right?
Yes, he's testing him.
Yeah.
And he asks the ultimate question, "Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest?"
And this is where the brilliance of Jesus' response just shines.
He doesn't get into a debate about the regulations. He doesn't pick rule number 247 or 512 out of a hat.
He just bypasses all of that.
Completely. Instead, he articulates the fundamental essence, the core principle, that gives meaning to all of Scripture.
So for any believer listening right now who's feeling overwhelmed by all the expectations on them, whether from church or their job or just their own conscience, this insight from Jesus is revolutionary.
It is. Knowing the essence is so much more important than mastering 1,000 specific secondary laws.
So what is this fundamental essence? Jesus lays it out.
Right. He does. Immediately. He gives the two great commands, which the teaching we're looking at calls the core summary of the entire faith.
The first, and the order here is crucial, is love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind.
And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself.
And the sermon confirms that these two commands, they're basically the guiding principle for the entire law and the prophets.
That's right. This isn't just a selection of, you know, good advice. This is the theological framework that summarizes everything God has revealed from Genesis all the way to Revelation.
But the teaching is so strong on this next point, the hierarchy. It's not like these are two co-equal partners.
Absolutely not.
They don't just stand side by side as two equally important duties.
No, and Jesus is explicit about it. He labels the first one, God love, as the greatest and first commandment. This is a structural necessity, and we really can't ignore it.
Explain that a little more, the structural part.
Well, think of it like a river. God is the source. If that source is clean and it's flowing strongly, then the river downstream will be healthy.
But if the source is polluted or blocked,
then the outflow is going to be corrupted too. You can't have a healthy river without a healthy source. God is love. He is the source. The relationship with him has to be established first.
So you really can't fulfill the second commandment loving your neighbor
Yeah.
without getting the first one right.
You can try, but any attempt at loving your neighbor that isn't rooted in a deep, foundational, all-consuming love for God, it just risks becoming something else entirely, like mere social work, or, you know, altruism driven by duty, or even ego, rather than the radical, self-sacrificial love that Scripture is talking about.
That's a vital difference.
It's everything. If I help my neighbor because I want to look good or feel good about myself, that's ego. But if I help my neighbor because God first loved me and I'm just reflecting his nature, that's authentic love.
So the first command is the source.
And the second command is the proof.
Let's talk about the motivation behind that love, because the teaching makes this beautiful distinction between two modes of faith. It calls them the slave's heart versus the child's heart.
Right. And we all kind of slide between these two, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. So the slave's heart, that's all about obligation, fear of punishment.
Exactly. This is the person who follows the rules, the letter of the law, because they have to. They're constantly checking off a compliance list, and they're focused on what they'll lose if they mess up.
It's like a student doing homework late on a Sunday night, just because they're afraid of getting detention.
That's a great way to put it. As opposed to the student who actually values the knowledge and is excited to learn, regardless of the grading system.
And that's the child's heart.
That is the child's heart. Obedience comes from a personal, loving relationship with the Father. The teaching quotes 1 John, "Perfect love drives out fear." Our faith is meant to be a loving relationship, not a compulsory checklist dictated by fear.
And Jesus' whole ministry was the ultimate example of this, right? Showing how the spirit of the law overrules the letter.
Constantly. The sermon brings up those examples of him meeting the leper and actually touching him to heal him.
Which, according to the strict legal code, was a huge violation.
A huge violation. Or healing the lame man on the Sabbath. From the perspective of the 600 rules, he was breaking the law.
But he wasn't ignoring the law, was he?
Not at all. He was demonstrating that the original spirit and purpose of the law, which is love and restoration and saving people, that has to take precedence over the literal reading of a restrictive clause.
The rules were made for humanity, not the other way around.
Precisely. And that's the real power of getting the priority right. If your life is driven by a love for God, you're empowered to look beyond the secondary rules to serve people, because love itself is the highest law.
Okay, so setting the priority structure straight, God first, neighbor second. It sounds simple enough on paper.
David.
But the teaching is very realistic about this. It asks, why is it so incredibly hard to actually fulfill that first and greatest commandment, to love God with all of our heart, soul, and mind?
That word all is the key, isn't it? It requires the dedication of our entire being, nothing held in reserve.
And the sermon identifies the single greatest obstacle that stands in our way. If we're really honest with ourselves, mm-hmm. the most powerful, pervasive idol deep in the human heart is simply myself.
Mm-hmm. It's us. We are just inherently wired for self-preservation and self-gratification. We unconsciously prioritize our own success, our own comfort, our own financial stability.
Our own satisfaction.
Our own satisfaction above God's commands or his glory. It's like we create a little universe where the self is the sun and God is maybe a paternal consultant we call on when things go wrong.
Well, the theological commentary in the sermon really reinforces this. Theologian Harvey Cox is quoted as saying that we are even capable of changing God based on our needs.
We mold God into an image that suits our immediate demands, rather than submitting to the God who actually is.
And then there's that quote from James Smith, which is, it's sobering. He says that what we truly yearn for, what we spend our energy on, what we most passionately desire, that is what our actual worship is.
Which is a tough pill to swallow. I mean, we can profess to worship God for an hour on Sunday, but if our deepest, most passionate yearning and effort from Monday to Saturday goes into building our career or curating a perfect online identity,
then what are we really worshiping?
We're worshiping our successful, secure, self-defined self.
And the consequences of this misplaced worship are, well, they're severe. They're not just philosophical. The teaching uses that terrifying example of Cain and Abel.
The first murder in human history.
And it happens immediately after an act of worship.
Why? Because Cain's offering was self-centered. He brought a flawed offering, which revealed that his heart's priority wasn't God's glory. It was his own effort and his own expectation of a reward.
So when his self-centered worship was rejected, his flawed priority led to this deep resentment.
And that resentment boiled over instantly into catastrophic destruction. It's a solemn warning for all of us. Prioritizing self over true worship. It doesn't just lead to spiritual apathy. It leads to the destruction of relationships and a total reversal of the life of love we're called to.
Okay, so if self-worship is the barrier, and if a true love for God is the foundation, then we have to ask the practical question. How does this priority of loving God manifest most clearly in a believer's life?
How do we actually put the first thing first?
Right.
The teaching gives a very direct, clear answer. Worship.
Just
worship. It's the most essential, concentrated expression of a believer's identity and their love for God. It's the time and place where we actively and publicly declare with our words, our hearts, and our actions that God is the first thing.
And this isn't a new idea. The sermon highlights Hebrews 10:25, that counsel to not neglect meeting together.
A practice the early church prioritized even when their lives were under threat. When we gather for worship, that's the most important marker by which the world identifies us.
But it requires effort, doesn't it? The sermon talks about this as a necessary cost, a price to be paid.
It does. True. Focused worship requires conscious preparation. It's not about just showing up if it's convenient. It's about deliberately making space for God.
What does that look like practically?
Well, it means setting aside time specifically for it. It means praying beforehand, readying our hearts with intention. The teaching even mentions simple things like choosing your clothes the day before so you're not rushed.
It's about treating that time as the most important appointment of the week.
Exactly. That deliberate effort is the tangible evidence that we are truly placing God in the first position in our schedule and in our mindset. We're not treating worship as some leftover obligation or an afterthought.
It's the difference between rushing in late, stressed out, checking your phone.
Right. Versus having your heart already settled, ready to meet God. That preparation is the proof that God love holds the primary spot over the demands of the self.
Okay, so let's try to pull all of this together. The core message of this teaching seems so clear. Almost every problem we face in faith and life, the confusion, the fear, the inner conflict, it all stems from getting this priority backward.
If the first thing is wrong, everything that follows is unsettled.
Which brings us to that beautiful and often misunderstood final thought in the sermon from St. Augustine. Love God and do what you will.
Mm-hmm. It's a powerful statement.
It sounds so dangerous on the surface, though, doesn't it? I think people hear that and they think it's a license for moral recklessness. Like, great, no more rules.
That is the common misreading. But the true, profound meaning is this. If the very center of your being is wholly devoted to God, if that first command is truly fulfilled,
then everything else follows.
Then every subsequent choice you make, every action you take freely, will naturally align with and be contained within the boundary of that ultimate love. If the foundation is solid, the house will stand firm.
It's the ultimate freedom, but it's a freedom rooted in absolute priority. It's the peace that comes from finally knowing the essence instead of chasing 600 rules.
Exactly. Our goal here was to extract these essential principles of priority from this teaching. So now we'll leave you, the believer, with a final thought to mull over.
Consider one specific area of your life right now where the priority of God's love might have been inadvertently displaced. Displaced by the idol of self, or maybe just by the crushing weight of secondary, complex rules.
And ask yourself, what is one specific action you can take this week to deliberately put that first thing back into the first place?